On the next few episodes of Black Belt Voices, we're diving into media and storytelling.
We had a great conversation with the director of network building and operations at Press On, Sierra Hinton.
When I hear the national media narrative of the South, it does not reflect my reality and what I see happening on the ground here. And so for folks to be like, we're going to start a publication that pushes back on that narrative, I was like, oh, absolutely. Please take my coins.
This week's Turn to Your Neighbor is a storyteller, a filmmaker, and a teacher. Hear from Prentice Dupin Sr. in our Turn to Your Neighbor segment.
And we're telling the origin story of Black Belt Voices.
Listening to the Black Belt Voices podcast, propagating the richness of Black Southern culture by telling stories from and about Black folks down South. Okay, Kara, as I mentioned, we're talking about storytelling today, but guess what I just realized?
What did you realize?
We have never told our listeners the Black Belt Voices story.
Apparently we have not, and a few people have pointed that out to us.
Right. So it's like, I feel like I've told it so many times, but we haven't actually told it on the podcast. So picture this. Sicily. No, just kidding. well, and so yeah, we want to tell you how we got started. We're, you know, in our second season, but yeah, might as well tell you where we came from. So really, picture this. It was 2016. So by the time this episode airs, we will have an election behind us. I want to talk about the outcome because that's not what this is about. It's about back in 2016, after that election outcome, you know, I was feeling some type of way, like a lot of people were, and I wanted to do more. So I'm not really a boots on the ground type activist or anything. So I was thinking, like, what can I do to kind of make a difference? And it was just a combination of things. But I think in April of that year, you know, I've realized that Black Southerners were kind of missing from the conversation. During the election season, then presidential candidate Donald Trump, whenever he was asked about African Americans, he would always talk about, you know, urban areas and crime and things like that. And then fast forward to after the election happened, you had people, you know, liberal progressive people in the North saying, throw the whole South away. They voted for Donald Trump. So I felt like Black Southerners were being left out of the conversation. So as someone who, you know, is a professional communicator by trade and writes for a living, I was like, well, how can we bring Black Southerners into the conversation? So the idea came about to have a blog. You know, I was a little late to focusing on, you know, Black Southerners and our stories down here. Like, we're all sorts of things. We're farmers and we're also, you know, scientists and innovators. So this is where the civil rights movement began. So I felt like we need to be part of this movement. So the first guest on that podcast, it wasn't a podcast then, the first guest on the blog was actually Charlene Oliver, who was in our last episode. And she was the first person I interviewed for the blog. And during our phone call, she actually cried telling the story about her mom. And it was very emotional. I was like, you know what, this should be a podcast, but I'm not a talker. I do better at writing. So unless I have a co-host, it's not going to be a podcast. So I had met with several different people in the area about the idea. Of course, you know, Katrina, our producer, my sister, she knew about it. My other sister, Megan, knew about it. And tons of PR folks that I just met with and talked about it. And Kara Wilkins was one of those. So Kara and I were at a coffee shop in Conway just shooting the breeze. And I think she was talking about Beyonce or something very pop culture-like. And she was very into it. And I was like, man, she's so engaging and has such a cool personality. She would be a great co-host. And I was like, hey, Kara, you know that blog I told you about, Black Belt? I was like, do you want to co-host a podcast? And she was like, sure.
So I thank you because I thought, wow, this is such a cool thing. Like, I was like, everything you were doing from Black Belt media, from the blog. Like, I was like, this is really great that she's building this platform to help people get their stories out. So I was just excited to be involved, because I think at one point me and you had just talked about me writing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, I can be a contributing writer. And I, to your point, I was going to write about pop culture stuff. Yes. I think we had talked about, and I still think we need to do this episode, we had talked about like Houston and rodeo.
Yes.
And like the origin of black people in the rodeo. And I tied it into Beyonce because she's from Houston. But, you know, so my point is, like, I was always on board with this. And I think I tell you all the time, like, thank you for inviting me, because it has just been so fun. And then the podcast has just made it even better.
It was very much like, you know, it's kind of like she was auditioning and didn't know it. And I was like, she's the one. Kara was very, I'm talking to everyone here, but was very excited about the whole project and so glad that she's part of this. And also Katrina, our producer, she also is a professional communicator. She works in PR. But before that, she was a television producer for a local news station. And then we were just talking about our hopes and dreams for the future one day on the phone. And she was like, I'm just a producer looking for a show. And I was like, oh yeah, by the way, Black Girl's going to be a podcast now. Do you want to produce it? And she was like, oh yeah, sure. So, and everything just worked out very well. Her husband, Prentice Dupins Jr., is a talented musician. So he's the one who scored our intro and outro music. So it's just been, so that's our story. We kind of started as back in 2017, we launched our first episode, as y'all know, in the fall of 2019. So it's been kind of a slow process, but we're really excited that it's been well received. We also haven't told you our good news. We were featured on Apple Podcasts back in January of 2020. And then again in June of 2020, you know, due to all the racial unrest after the death of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. And then Vanity Fair featured us in the list of podcasts that educate you, that will educate you on Black history. And then fast forward, Oprah Magazine featured us in a roundup of podcasts to make you smarter.
Which,
like,
is
what?
Nuts.
I'm like, whoa. Like,
I thought about us being on like that list, right?
No. Yeah. And that was really exciting to be like, and there's some heavy hitters on that list. Just, I don't have to listen from me, but like Oprah Magazine featured us. So we've been really grateful for the listeners and everyone who made this a reality. And yeah, just anyway, it's not a commercial about leaving us a rating and review, but we appreciate those who have, so folks can find us and have found us. So yeah, I think that's the Black Girl story in a nutshell. Yeah.
I've been saying we should take this show on the road, because I think a lot of people have reached out to us to say, how did y'all get started? And so this was like a good synopsis, but, you know, maybe there'll be an opportunity in the future for us to kind of talk about some of the nuts and bolts. Because to your point, it wasn't a quick, like, it, you know, it, we had to plan and put the things together.
Right. So now that y'all know the Black Belt Voices story, we're going to take a short break. And up next, we'll hear from the Director of Network Building and Operations at Press On Media. Her name is Sierra Hinton. She's awesome. She's the publisher of Scalawag, which is a journalism and storytelling organization focused on the South. We're back after this.
Hi, it's Katrina Dupins with this Turn to Your Neighbor segment. When you talk to this North Little Rock, Arkansas neighbor, it doesn't take long to recognize he is a person with a wide range of knowledge who has a passion for learning. Prentice Dupins Sr., yes, we're related, is a science and drama teacher, a pastor, a playwright, and most recently, a filmmaker. He wrote his first play when he was a teenager for his church.
From that, I learned how to craft a story. I mean, it was interesting that happened then. But it was a little bit later that I actually got into really skilled playwriting. And what I have learned from playwriting is that the stage is all about the story and dialogue. But for film, the story is all about the visuals and the character. I would probably classify my style of storytelling as being character-centered, on checking and making sure we follow a character. We see that character's development. And that's kind of basic to storytelling, but I truly, really look at making sure that that comes across in stories.
The short film, Last Stop, was the thesis project Mr. Dupins did when he earned his Master of Fine Arts in Film at the University of Central Arkansas.
Cross over. You freed in, but keep moving. Hunter's over there looking for runaways.
And the idea came from the concept of what would my ancestors say to me now when I was going through a particular troubling time that actually happened to me in college, troubling time back in the 70s, 80s, not a lot of outreach to mental health, if you would, for in the African-American community. And so I struggled with some issues of depression myself. And one of the things that helped bring me through that was to ask that question, what would my great-great-grandfather say to me to help me go through this right now, considering he had been a slave, had been freed, fought in the Civil War on the Union side, and then settled here in Little Rock, Arkansas. And that's where the idea for Last Stop came from. And so the story centers around a young veteran who's suffering PTSD, and he goes to his family's cemetery to take his life. And as he attempts to do that, he is thrown back in time to 1860, and he has to live, he has to survive the night as a runaway slave. And the characters that he runs into is the character that I created for my great-great-grandfather and my great-great-grandmother. I think the message of the story would still be the same of what I thought they would share to me because of their struggles is what I would share to a young generation now, and that is life is precious, and you need to pull every experience and every opportunity you can out of it. You have a purpose, and there's a reason for you to be here, and when you find that purpose and that reason, that's when life begins to make sense, and you begin to develop your gifts, and you can flow in those, and then you can be a blessing to others. That's kind of what I'd share with them.
Hey, who are you?
Move.
I gotta get to a hospital.
I guess you thinks I's making dinner. There's ain't no doctors around here.
Last Stop earned recognition in several film festivals, including the first place prize for narrative short at the Kingdomwood Christian International Film Festival.
My boy, he learned himself how to read, and I used to love for him to read to me.
Watch Last Stop on Vimeo On Demand and learn more about other projects Mr. Dupins is working on by visiting 1410mediagroup.com. For this Turn to Your Neighbor segment, I'm Katrina Dupins.
We're back. Scalawag is a journalism and storytelling organization that reimagines the roots and futures of the South.
The executive director and publisher, Sierra Hinton, calls North Carolina home.
I'm from a small town called Reidsville, which is rural, very rural, and came to live in the Triangle area when I went to boarding school.
Yeah, when folks say they're from a rural area, I get a little skeptical. I have to know how rural.
I think it's so funny. The other day I was talking to our managing editor, Lovey, and she was like talking about how folks, you know, are moving to the South and how they think it's like so cute that, you know, they live near some like farm and they do all this farm to table stuff and all of that. And she's like, you know, I grew up on a dairy farm, not too far away from here. And I was like, that's so funny. Cause I too grew up on a dairy farm.
Me too. I mean, I didn't grow up on it, but my grandparents next door owned it.
Yes.
And so my mom grew up on one. And so she milked cows for my grandparents up until my grandpa died in 2001. So, yes, my neighbors were cows and my grandparents.
Exactly, right? Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. You pass. You are country.
Yes, yes. Definitely in the country, like, could not get internet out there for the longest because broadband access, which is something that we also think a lot about in our work.
Okay, she's country. She gets a pass.
So, not only is she country, Sierra has an undying love for the South, which she brings to her work at Scalawag. In fact, she gave to the organization when it was a Kickstarter, even before she was a part of it, because she believed in its mission.
I invested for a couple of reasons. One, a good friend of mine from high school was actually part of the founding team. So he was one of the folks who was raising money to start ScaloAg. And then two, I just thought it was really dope that here are these like young Southerners. It was a, even though the organization was white led, the founding team was very diverse. And I had been feeling for a while, like, yeah, when I hear the national media narrative of the South, it does not reflect my reality and what I see happening on the ground here. And so for folks to be like, we're going to start a publication that pushes back on that narrative, I was like, oh, absolutely. Please take my coins.
Years later, she applied to become executive director. While she didn't get the role at that time, she did join the growth team.
The executive director they did hire turned out not to be a good fit. He resigned within months and left the organization in a place of financial hardship. The team was not in a good place, and Sierra was there to help them rebuild.
The goal of it was to get the organization back on track. And we like sort of did that a little bit. It definitely was not as easy or as simple as a 6-month plan. But, you know, here we are 2 years later and a lot has changed and we've grown a ton. When ScaloAg was founded in 2014, it was white led. All of our co-founders are white. It was a print publication. We were doing a quarterly print magazine. And even though we had always centered marginalized folks in the work that we were doing, it wasn't the same as what we're doing now, which is really trying to create people-powered media, do journalism and storytelling that is done with community and driven by community. And so every day, you know, we are trying to figure out how we get can have deeper engagement with, the communities that our team is from. That was another big sort of shift, is that the team went from being white led to black led to woman run. And, you know, I think our identities are what really drove us to ask, how can we be serving our people better?
So that's really cool. I mean, she took an organization that, you know, really needed some help and guidance, and she was able to shift it to really work on community-based and racial justice issues.
Yeah, and I love the work they do at Press On Media and ScaloAg. Like, they were actually a model when I was thinking about starting something like Black Belt because of their focus on the South. And they had a webinar earlier this year, and something they said that really stuck with me. They were like, we are writing for communities, not about communities.
Yeah.
So that's where that that engagement with community comes in. So I really appreciate the way they do things there.
Yeah.
When it started, it was really just about telling the untold and undertold stories of the South and giving new voices, uplifting new voices and giving them space, and was focused mainly on, you know, just narrative shift. How do we present a different South? How do we let folks know that the South is not a monolith, which is all really important and definitely still a part of the work that we do. But yeah, it just felt like for us, it didn't go far enough, and it wasn't clear enough what we were doing to change, to contribute to change and transformation in the region.
Sierra says now their content is more focused. They publish under 3 verticals. Those are state politics, art and soul, and race and place.
And along the way, they started looking at other types of content, like Southern Foodways.
Right now, in food media, it is predominantly white voices. And we really see a space for more folks of color. And ironically, you know, when you're thinking about foodways and agriculture and the land, You know, I don't know about y'all, but I assume this, but like, I think about Indigenous folks. I think about, you know, Black folks, especially Black folks in the South have always farmed the land. So it's just ironic that the folks who are leading the conversation about that are white people. So, you know, we're just trying to help shift that too.
I have a good friend who lives in North Carolina, and he works as part of the, and I don't want to get it wrong, but I guess it's like the Black Farmers Initiative. And I think it's doing work around supporting Black farmers in agriculture, but also working in Black communities to make sure that, you know, CSA boxes and things that, so to, again, to your point about, you know, folks come and move in and they're like, oh, I do farm to table. Well, that's real nice if you can afford your little farm to table, and or if you have the resources necessary to cook your fresh fruits and vegetables, and or you have the means to be, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like it layers on. So this Black Farmers Initiative, I think, you know, works to, yes, seed fresh fruits and vegetables in communities, but it also works on the kind of community reinvestment, community development side, keeping in mind that, you know, we do have parents and people who would love to eat fresh fruits and vegetables if I knew how to cook it, or if it didn't deteriorate in a week. And that's not where my dollars can stretch, because I got, you know, a few kids and I got to make sure things work. So I just was interested if, like, you had heard of that, or if you were interested in that, or if you knew anything about that.
I feel like maybe I have heard about this. And I also just, like, you know, not to just be dropping people's names as a recording, but I also wonder if we, like, know, well, I don't know this person personally, but I know of this person.
Is it Gerald Harris?
No, this person's name is Julius Tillery. But yes, that just speaks to
Julius is over Black Cotton.
Yes.
Yes,
see, he went to the same boarding school, not at the same time, but we went to the same boarding school.
We want Julius on too. I'm very interested in the concept of reclaiming cotton. Like I am, that is the coolest idea to me. I love it. Yes. And actually, it's funny because when Adina and I first got started, I was like, listen, you need to find this group. It's called Black Cotton. And I was like, they're doing some really cool things, you know, with basically figuring out, well, one, reclaiming cotton, reclaiming it as the work that we did and the land that we tilled and that we deserve to own. And then also flipping it on its head to, like, really turning cotton from a, I don't want to say not from a commodity, but also looking at it from a, you know, just like there's some very visual concepts and some ways that it is being used that I just am like, that is fascinating. And I've ordered one of their products. So yes, I know Julie. I know of Julie. Okay. So we're on the same page.
We talked a lot about movement journalism and what it is. And that's what we want to do at Black Belt. Like, our big vision is storytelling for social change. And I'm glad she put a name to what we wanted to do.
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't know what movement journalism was, just to be honest, before we met Scalawag and before I just, you know, to me, I was like, we're just talking about issues that are important to us and important to the Black community. So to hear a title, a phrase, you know, put behind it was really interesting. And I mean, in talking to Sierra, she reiterates that movement journalism has a fluid meaning. But overall, it means journalism in search of justice and liberation. And she talked a little bit about what that looks like.
Because when other folks tell our stories, it often lacks nuance and complexity. And it really flattens us in a way that is just not realistic, right? And we see that manifest as stereotyping or tropes or... like I said earlier, like folks ending up as a monolith, and it doesn't leave space for our full humanity. And so when we tell our own stories, we can dig into the layers and the intersections and really present our people and tell the stories of our people in the way that we know them to be, and not through the lens of whiteness or any other, you know, dominant culture that, like I said, would just flattens us. And it's really asking like the question, how can storytelling, media, journalism lead to social, political, and economic transformation? You know, how can we tell stories with our community? How can we amplify the work of movement and community organizers? How can we get folks the news and information they need to make informed decisions about their lives? And just really, how are we changing the relationship between journalists and the community? What does it look like when a journalist or a storyteller or a media maker is from the community and a part of the community and working with the community? And so that, you know, we definitely don't want to prescribe for anybody exactly what movement journalism means. But when we've looked at folks who have done this historically, knowing that like we are not the first people to practice journalism in this way. So, you know, we talk a lot about Ida B. Wells and Marvell Cook and folks who were really embedded in community and served to amplify the stories from their people. And, you know, so that's what we're talking about, and just leaving space for others to, you know, really tell us what movement journalism means for them. But it's definitely all rooted in people and community.
And this is the kind of stuff that excites me, like amplifying stories from the people who live there. Like that was the reason Black Belt got started. That they saw a gap and they wanted to fill it, because as we mentioned, so many people tell our stories for us. So like we need to tell our own stories.
I love that. It's particularly thinking about, you know, reclaiming that the work basically that went behind telling our story, because we were the only people to tell our story, and to be able to amplify our voices, you know, through the paper and other mediums. And I even think about and this person necessarily is not in terms of movement journalism, but when I think about people using their platforms, well, actually, I would take that back. This is probably a form of movement journalism, because to your point, it's not something that, you know, necessarily needs to be defined. But John H. Johnson, who's from Arkansas, but he founded Jet Magazine and Ebony Magazine. And it's like, at one point, you know, everybody had Jet, everybody had Ebony, like my grandma and the woman at my hair salon. And so, but the stories were our stories. I mean, mm-hmm. They hit on national narratives as well, but you were able to find out things in those publications that you could not find anywhere else. And so that is very important for us to hearken back, I don't know, to that kind of medium and that form of communication, just because, especially now in this like political cycle dominated of 24-hour news, that some of it is relevant, some of it is not. You really honestly sometimes can't catch the bits and pieces that you need to. I was reading something on Twitter the other day, which I is my preferred medium. And somebody was like, you know, what's happening in the USPS? Like, we need to be given more information about this. And I was like, the information is out there. Like, mm-hmm. I see it on my timeline all up and down. What people need is, what's the next step? Like, what should you do to help figure out whatever is going on? So that's just an example. But I'm saying, like, I could see that also being into the Black community of, okay, here's what's happening. Here's what we need to do. So the voter suppression thing that you talked about is spot on. So yeah, just making sure that movement journalism leads us to action, which again is historically what those publications have been doing for us and did for us for a long time.
Yeah, and that reminds me of a conversation that I've been having with folks recently. And by having, I mean intentionally bringing up around and calls back to your question about independent media and why it's important around Black morning radio shows, and how so many of them are corporate owned, and by corporate owned, I mean white owned, and the hosts of them are entertainers. And there's not a lot of news being shared. So, you know, there's a lot of white people and people in the dominant culture who wake up and they listen to things like NPR or their favorite morning news podcast like The Daily from the New York Times. And so as soon as they wake up, they are getting access to news and information. And, you know, Black folks, we're over here and we're not getting that same access. We're not getting that same amount of news and information about what's happening in the world. And so like that gap and that difference contributes to us not having, you know, the same amount of, yeah, just knowledge and access and news and information and knowing how you navigate the system that already wasn't set up for us.
I mean, we're getting news, but it's about like the Real Housewives, which don't, exactly. I'm not hating the Real Housewives, but I am also saying, let's also talk about like the election and how we get people counted and the census and all these other things too. So in addition to like what happened on Housewives.
Exactly. Both and.
We are not a monolith. We can take in more than one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Anything else y'all want to add before we move into our call and response questions?
I'm just so excited to know about this. Like now I am following you all and I will be, I'm excited.
So. Yes, I love it.
I love it. Also, I have to say, when I heard Scallywag, I went to the Chicken Head song from 3.
We do too.
Ball head, Scallywag.
Absolutely.
Which again, I was like, you know, maybe this is Black women recreating and reclaiming the narrative of a Scallywag and saying that we can be all things. We don't have to just be. We can be WAP and we can also be over here writing papers and leading academic movements. And so.
Amen. Okay, it's time for our call and response segment. And we're going to ask you a few questions. Yes. And you just tell us the first thing that comes to mind. Are you ready? Okay. What do you wish people knew or understood about the South?
I wish that folks knew what I was talking about earlier, which is like, there is nuance and complexity and many layers to the South, just like there is nuance, complexity, and many layers to Black folks and other folks of color. And then the second thing is something that we say at Scallywag is that the South is everywhere Black people are. So it's not just confined to this region because of the migration, because of our connection through family. You know, when you go outside the South, people call it soul food, but it's the same thing as what we're eating down here. The South travels with Black folks and is everywhere that Black people are.
Ooh, I love that. Because I always want to like talk to other people. I'm like, oh, I want to talk to this person. Oh man, they weren't born here and they don't live here now. Bummer. But like,
their parents are from here. Their grandparents.
Exactly.
Somebody's from here.
Somebody's from here. Next question. What do you love most about living in the South?
Yes. Black people, warmth. And one of my favorite things, my partner who is from Cleveland does not appreciate this, but how we treat time, understanding that time is a social construct and we will take our time and we will start when we want to start and we will just be leisurely. There is no rush. Even when we speak, there is no rush. That is something that I will always love about the South.
That's great. If you could change one thing about the South, what would it be?
More labor organizing. I think that to really affect change in this country and transform and get rid of some of this wealth inequality really dismantle systemic oppression, we are going to have to organize working class folks and we're all going to have to get on the same page. And labor organizing is a really big part of that. There's so many states in the South that are right to work states, and it just makes it really difficult to organize labor and to organize folks across lines of difference. So that's something that I think the Midwest in particular has on us and would love to see us be able to do more of that here.
Wow, that's a great answer. Fill in the blank. I would love to sip sweet tea on the front porch with blank.
This is going to be like sentimental and gushy. A little, I would love to sit on the front porch right now with my little brother. He is in Austin, Texas, and this pandemic has kept us apart. And we're very close. And so I wish it was something like prolific, like Oprah. A lot of people have been bringing her up lately, but no, it's just my little brother. I love him. And we just love to be able to sit out on the porch with him right now.
Oh, that's so sweet. Makes me sad too.
I know. Me too.
So what's your favorite Black and or Southern saying?
My favorite Southern saying is good Lord willing and the creek don't rise. Mm-hmm. Yes, it just encompasses all the things, like one, like, you know, that God is in control and we actually have no control over all of this. Which is also true with the creek rising. We have no control. And it's just such a good reminder that, like, especially in the middle of a pandemic, like, you have no control. You never know what's going to happen. You never know what the next day is going to bring. And so you just, you know, look to God, look to the universe and hope for the best. And if the creek don't rise, we're all good.
I like that. I mean, I never thought how profound that statement was. That is a word. Okay.
Yes, exactly right.
Okay, so finally, what's something awesome that has happened in your life recently?
Yesterday, I was on a panel with Erica Alexander, who plays Maxine Shaw on Living Single. And I tried not to be a fangirl. I tried to be real chill about it. I came in there super calm, but inside I was not calm. I have like a whole painting of the Living Single cast in my house. So I'm like, yo, I'm on this call with this person. And there's a painting in my house. This is super meta. And she was just so dope. It's always nice when you connect with somebody that you don't know that you've watched from afar, and they are also just like a really great person. And I loved it. So yes, that was definitely a recent highlight in life.
I would have unabashedly said, "Ride the Maverick."
And move that painting strategically behind your computer.
Like, I thought about it. Oh my God, here you
what
are.
What is this? Can I take a picture of us over the internet?
Exactly, right?
I'm like, oh girl.
That's great. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you. This is amazing. I love it. I love anytime I get to sit around and talk to Black women. Oh. It's my favorite.
We'd like to thank Sierra Hinton for joining us. And we'd also like to send a special message of gratitude to Press On Media. The parent company of this podcast, Black Belt Media LLC, was recently named the recipient of the Southern Movement Media Fund. This fund was launched to bring much needed resources to Southern media makers and journalists practicing movement journalism. So they're putting their money where their mouth is.
Check out Scalawag at www.scalawagmagazine.org and Press On at presson.media. You can also follow Sierra on Twitter at Iola B. Hinton, at IolaBHinton. Thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts so others can find us. You can also listen to the Black Belt Voices podcast on most streaming platforms.
This episode was edited and produced by Katrina Dupins and Prentice Dupins Jr., with music composed by Prentice Dupins Jr. Black Belt Voices is a production of Black Belt Media, LLC. Be sure to follow Black Belt Voices on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Black Belt Voices, and visit blackbeltvoices.com.